photos of. Okay, let us remember where we are, okay? So, when you prove the tort, injury, duty, breach, causation, you look at the defenses, right? The first defense is the plaintiff's fault, right? And we saw two flavors, the old version, which is contrib. I knew you were coming. He said you would come. And I was like, no, she'll be here. Okay, the old version of plaintiff's fault, which is contrib. The modern version of plaintiff's fault, which is those comparative statutes. And then today we're going to look at the second, or we started last class looking at a second defense, assumption of the risk. Right, we looked at express assumption of the risk, which is simply a contractual waiver, right? An exculpatory clause. And today we're going to start looking at the harder concept of implied. Okay, there are two big questions with implied, okay? Question number one is, what is it? That's what we're doing today. We're going to try and recognize implied assumption of the risk, see what criteria it has, maybe tease out a couple of different flavors of implied assumption of the risk. So that's job number one. What is it? The question we're leaving for Monday is a much harder question, and it was in a series of the notes and in the case itself, which is, what happens to assumption of the risk when you move to comparative fault, right? So one of the buzz through the case would be, oh look, we used to have assumption of the risk, but now we've enacted this comparative fault statute, what happens? Okay? So that question, what happens to implied assumption of the risk when you enact a comparative fault statute, is the one we're leaving for Monday, right? Today we're going to figure out what it is, and then Monday we're going to ask, is it still viable and to what extent? Good? Okay, so the main case we're looking at today is Smollett versus Skating Development Corporation. Everybody realized she was roller skating, not ice skating, right? Roller skating. See, look, she came too.
I doubted you both, I'm sorry.
Apologize to them. Okay. Okay, anyone want to give me the basic facts, the basic holding? Oh, the back row! Yes, I'm here for the family for me yesterday. Go ahead.
She was skating in a rink. And her, I guess it was her husband, wanted to leave. She said she'd go around two more times. And she went around, and when she got off, she went onto the carpet, which was lower than the actual floor. And she ended up falling. She was avoiding a child. And she ended up breaking her wrist.
Okay. She actually suffers fairly severe injuries from it, right? She needs surgery twice on her arm. And so who does she sue, and what does she say is wrong? So who does she sue?
Sue the owner of the rink.
Right, the owner operator of the rink, and what does she say is wrong? The child, I wouldn't have come off down the dip, hit the carpet, fallen, and broken my thing. Excellent. So what does the jury do? For or against the plaintiff? I'll victimize someone else into that row. The jury. What's the jury do? For the plaintiff, for the defendant. Yep.
For the plaintiff, because this court says that she implied the risk that she started skating, and they reverse it back on the jury.
Right. So the Third Circuit, the Federal Court of Appeals, which hears appeals from, it's a great place to clerk. Did you realize that? Because they hear appeals from all over the world, owned by America. Okay, so they hear the appeal from the Virgin Islands, and the Third Circuit reverse and says it's assumption of the risk, you take nothing. So we know this defense works to block it. Okay, what I want to do right now is work out what the main case looks like, because only when you understand the main case can you succeed in analyzing assumption of risk. And it'll be a little bit of review. So what's the injury?
Broken wrist,
right? Physical harm is an injury and she has a broken wrist. Anyone work out where the duty comes from?
She's an invitee.
She's an invitee. Everybody see? She's complaining about the condition of the property. No guardrail and the drop. So therefore, she's arguing that the landowner owes her a duty as an invitee to have reasonably safe premises. Yep.
I have a question about that. Why is this not being looked at as an open hazard case?
So you could argue that they do take reasonable care here because it's an obvious, it's perfectly safe, right? And that's clearly what they argue to the jury. Okay? So it's up to the jury to decide breach. Okay? So what you're doing is you're stepping here and saying you owe a duty of reasonable care, right? Because they're an invitee, and reasonable care does not include telling about something that's open and obvious, right? But what she's saying the breach is. So what does she say the breach is? She said her claim for breach is no guardrail and what?
The drop and carpet.
Drop and carpet, right? No guardrail, drop and carpet. Right?
But aren't all three of those open and obvious?
You would think so, except what does the manager tell her?
That it's safer without the guardrail.
Bingo.
So that's why it's not in a property liability case.
No, this is a property liability case.
Okay, we're just taking a different flavor of it?
No. The question is, did they exercise reasonable care, right? And her argument is there wasn't reasonable care because there isn't a guardrail to prevent me falling down that. Okay? So their argument is that makes the premises unsafe. That's how they breached. So it is a landowner case. They're arguing that this is the breach. Okay? Okay, cause and fact. Is it there? Yes? In fact, how many causes are there? Hers? What else? Who else? So there's the ice rink, the kid, and hers. So we have at least three cause and facts, but their breach is one of the cause and facts. So you got from cause and fact. Proximate cause, who's the foreseeable plaintiff given this breach?
Skaters.
Any skaters, right? Any skater, so she can get through that. What's the foreseeable harm? Fall off, right? Fall off, and that's exactly what happens to her. Does it matter that she only fell off when she was evading someone and then there was someone on the left? It was a weird way of happening it. Answer?
No.
I need a roll?
Exact manner.
You don't have to see the exact manner in which she exits. It's enough if you can foresee falling off, exiting injuries. She broke her arm and had to have two surgeries.
Eggshell
skull. It doesn't matter that she suffered more extreme injuries than we would expect, right? It's still a foreseeable harm because it's a falling off or exiting injury. Is there any argument that the risk is over? Nope. Don't even discuss it. How about a superseding cause that breaks the causational chain? You could argue the kid, does the kid look superseding?
No.
Because it's foreseeable that other people fall all the time on roller rinks. So there is no superseding cause right here. So it looks as if we've got all the way through the case, right? Their premises weren't reasonably safe because they constructed this combination of guardrail, drop, and carpet, and that was the cause, in fact, approximate cause of her injury. Okay, let's look briefly at plaintiff's fault. Is claim here that she was like rollerblading drunk or fast or like she's doing flips? Answer? But didn't she come off like rather quickly? Isn't that a lack of reasonable care on her own part?
No, I would say the only thing I think the court or the defendant was inferring is that as an experienced skater, you probably wouldn't skate so close to someone who fell.
Okay, so let's try that. So it's reasonable care. How are we refining breach? Reasonable care of a
experienced
skater. So notice we get to ask, did she take reasonable care as an experienced? Right, the first step of breach is refined. Did she take reasonable care as an experienced skater? Anything else we can take into account? What did she face?
When the kid fell over, like, reasonable care to avoid that kind of...
And how would you characterize it when all of a sudden the child falls in front of you?
Obviously swerving off of the...
An emergency not of her own making, right? Which would actually raise or lower the amount of care. Lower. So we think she probably did take reasonable care for her own safety, right? She's just skating along. She is an experienced skater, but there's an emergency, and then she apparently tries to get out of the way the best she can. So it doesn't look as if she lacked reasonable care for her own safety. Everybody see it? Okay, so we're not going to play with plaintiff's fault. Instead, our question is assumption of the risk. Did she expressly assume the risk? There's a little argument in there that the owner's trying to do something. What did he put up? Skate at your own risk. Okay, let's do a distal horse check. Is that contract? No, people love these little signs.
Skate at your own risk. Burp.
Right? It's not a contract, so there's no express assumption of the risk. You don't agree to it by skating, right? I'm sorry. So we're on to implied assumption of the risk, okay? How can we get implied assumption of the risk? What does the court define implied assumption of the risk as? And I want to find where the majority tells us what we're looking for implied assumption of the risk. Cute little phrase. The court says, Third Circuit says what? Smollett assumed the risk. What did they find? She did what? Yes.
That she had to walk on that to get to the roller.
Okay, those are the facts you're using, and we'll use those facts for a second, but we need a test. So, what's the test? Yep.
Is it Smollett fully understood the risk of harm to herself and voluntarily chose to enter the experience?
So, you have to know of the risk, and by know, we mean know and understand, or sometimes they say appreciate. So, know and appreciate the risk. And then voluntarily encounter the risk, or voluntarily proceed to encounter the risk. Okay, so to get implied assumption of the risk, to imply that Smollett assumed or agreed to the risk, we have to show that the defendant, sorry, the plaintiff, knows, i.e., is aware of and understands or appreciates the risk, and voluntarily proceeds to encounter the risk. What do we mean by the risk? What risk? No. Skating's cute, but no. What risk are we saying she's like, I'm okay with that risk? No.
The situation of place.
Not having the guardrail. Everybody see, what we're saying is, because breach is what? Breach is really a risk, right? Breach is always, there's a risk of harm. We're saying, she looked at that risk, and she says, call by me, right? So whenever we say, were you aware of the risk, and did you voluntarily encounter it, we're saying the risk posed by defendant's conduct. Okay, everybody see it? So the risk posed by the breach was that she's going to fall because there's no guardrail drop and carpet. So, which of these two factors is undisputed because it's so clear? So which of those two is undisputed because it's so clear? She proceeds. What facts would you use to match this? Starts to skate. Right? She starts to skate, you get she voluntarily proceeds to encounter the risk. Everybody see that? So this is the one that they're arguing about. This is the one where the majority and the minority of the dissent disagree. Does she really know and understand the risk? Okay. So why does the majority say yes? She knows and understands the risk. Someone gave me a fact. Yes?
She had to skate on the carpet to get to
the room. So the majority goes, look, see?
Duh!
She knows this is a carpet, she knows this is a slippery surface, and she knew she had to step up. Okay? What else are we sure she knew about?
She talked to the manager about the guardrails, and he said that it's safer this way.
She says there's no guardrails!
Yes, you're right.
Okay? So the majority say, look, she knows. No rail, drop, carpet. There's one other thing they say she knows. Yep.
Wasn't that her past experience would have made her aware of the fact that this could, like a child could fall and there could be impediments?
That there were going to be falls and there were children. So she knows all the dangers are going off, and she knows there are going to be people falling that she needs to avoid. So they're like, hey, she knows and understands the risks. So what does the dissent argue? The dissent argues, no, I don't think you can show that she knows and appreciates the risk. Why not?
Because she knows them all independently and not together.
She doesn't realize the combo effect. So what word is more powerful there? Does she know them?
She's aware of them.
She's aware. Does she appreciate or understand the risk they pose?
She doesn't appreciate all of them together.
Bingo. So see how important it is to realize that the test is just not do you know or aware of, but do you actually appreciate the risk they pose? And so the dissent says she doesn't appreciate the combo. They have one other argument. But come on, she looked at the rail. She says, why isn't there a safety rail? So how can they say she doesn't appreciate the risk posed by the lack of a safety rail when she specifically asks about it? How can the defendant argue that she didn't appreciate the risk posed by it because she specifically asks about, hey, why do you have a safety rail?
Because she hasn't been skating in 2 years.
Nope.
Because I told her it was safe.
He told her the reason we don't have a rail is it's safer not to have one. So the dissent's argument is
she assumed there was no risk.
How can she be understanding the risk when they specifically told her, oh, there's absolutely no problem, there's no risk with no guardrail, it's better. So that's the dissent's argument. The dissent's argument is that they expressly tell her the opposite. They expressly say to her, no, it's better this way. So you can't complain she didn't appreciate the risk when the owner expressly told her there was no risk. So that's their argument. Okay, there's a couple of things they agree on, whether you realize it or not. How are we measuring these two, objectively or subjectively? Oh, great! So what's the test? Does the court ask what would a reasonable person know? Does the plaintiff know? This is subjective. Both these are subjective. Why? So what are we doing with both of them? We're implying what? What is it we're trying to show? So why is this a defense, do you think? So So why is express assumption the risk of defense?
Because they know that there is a risk if they choose to take a risk.
Bingo. They agree to it. They're like, it's fine with me. So what are we trying to show with implied assumption of the risk? She actually agreed. We can look at what she did and say that counts as an agreement. So see how it has to be subjective? We're asking, did she say okay, that's express assumption of the risk, or given her behavior, can we say she was really agreeing, she was really waiving this risk? Everybody see what we're looking for? So that's why it's subjective, because it's standing in the way for a expressed agreement. Yep.
So because she understands that she's taking the risk, it's the same as an express agreement.
Yeah. See, we'd really like express, but we don't have one, so we're willing to recognize implied assumption of this. It's just that it's the same between express consent and implied consent, right? We don't have express consent, but given her subjective knowledge and her subjective decision to proceed, we can say that counts as consent. It's implied agreement. See it? So that's why we're going to measure this subjectively. The other thing that the court agrees on is who typically decides this, court or jury? Jury. But the majority concludes that a jury would have to find assumption of the risk on these facts, and the dissent says, no, I think a jury could say she didn't really assume the risk. Are we good? You're like, why did Gillis say it was hard? Everybody good? Okay, let's do sports. So let's look at note one. What kind of activity are you going to easily meet these criteria for? Recreational activities, particular sports. Notice that they're both pretty easy on you subjectively understanding the risk and on you voluntarily proceeding, right? Oh, I think I'll play baseball. Voluntarily proceeding, classic. Okay? What area do we sometimes ask whether you really have a voluntary proceeding to encounter the risk? What other place of activity? Workplace. Right? And the note tells you that actually traditionally courts just said, oh, he chose to obey his boss and go into that dangerous room. So the courts actually used to very willingly find this criteria even at work, which is one of the reasons states adopted workers' comp. But today, if we're outside workers' comp, you might ask questions about whether you really have someone voluntarily proceeding. Okay. I want to now do hard stuff. Boo. Okay, so what I first want you to do is talk to a friend or a group for 5 minutes and come up with a sport example of voluntarily assuming the risk. Okay? Notice you need to know two things. You have to know what the risk is, right? So you have to have worked out what is the negligent behavior that the defendant engaged in, and then you have to prove the plaintiff knew of the risk and voluntarily proceeded. Everybody see what you're doing? You get to pick your favorite sport. No cage fighting, though. Any normal sport, okay? And come up with a hypo, and then I'll call on you. Well, since Cardozo likes sword fighting, fencing is still in, if you want. Okay? So 5 minutes, come up with a big hypo that illustrates that.
Thank you.
do you guys have?
Okay, so I'm watching people play dodgeball, and I decide I want to get into the game. So I run in, I join, but Megan kicks the ball and hits me in the head, and I fall over.
Okay, so what's the negligent conduct?
She kicked it rather than throwing it.
Bingo, so she's kicking the ball. It's not how we use it, but it's a lack of reasonable care. And how did you know of the risk?
Because I had seen the game and I knew people were getting hit.
And did you voluntarily proceed to encounter it?
Yes.
Bingo, okay, that'll do. Yep. Oh, but that's not the high for you. Oh, so you want to say your plaintiff actually did what? You can change your high thought at work.
Well, I just thought it was implied. Like, I mean, everybody that golfs, like, had a reasonable amount has seen somebody get hit with the ball.
But see, you're saying something different. You're saying everybody would agree to that. And she's saying, I saw it. And see how that one's subjective? What's your one?
Objective.
Bingo. Excellent. So this one is an objective test. There are certain inherent risks. See it? Okay, anyone else want to give me their hypo? Yes.
Boxing.
Okay.
Hitting someone after the bell rings. I mean, you can box.
And so who are you suing?
The other boxer.
Okay? So one boxer hits the other boxer after the bell rings. And how are you proving this?
Know that it's an end risk that you're going to be boxing.
You know that it's the kind of risk. Which one was that?
Inherent.
You were playing inherent. Everybody see the difference? Okay? Everybody see the difference between the two. One is, oh, me too. That's cool. Okay, let's do it on Smollett. What are the inherent risks that she agreed to? Falling. Did she sue over an inherent risk, or what was she suing over?
You know this because we just did it. What's the risk she's suing over?
Property conditions, the guardrail.
Right, the guardrail. Do you think that's an inherent risk? No, right? So see how they're different? This one is an argument that you knew and understood a risk and you voluntarily encountered it. There's no guardrail, I'm okay, I'll go skate. This one is, there are certain inherent risks in the activity, and how do you do this? What's the other criteria? You voluntarily proceed, you engage in the sport. So see how they are slightly different? This one picks up the nickname primary assumption of the risk, and this one some courts call secondary. Okay, so they actually put different labels on. Primary, there are certain inherent risks in the activity, and whether you know about them at all, when you proceed to play the sport, your claim's barred. This one is a subjective agreement to that risk. Yeah.
So the first one, it would seem like you see a sport or a game going on and you might see something that's different about that game versus, like, say you're wanting to go play a soccer game and you notice that they're like huge people but you're still wanting to go play. That's very subjective, but it's not an inherent risk that there are always going to be huge people playing soccer, and that's
right. So like, this one is inherent risks in the sport, right?
So that's just what somebody would always put down on a piece of paper.
So let's do skiing. What do you think are inherent risks of skiing?
Falling
over, hitting a tree, right? Maybe getting off that stupid toe, right? Right. No frostbite. Those are inherent. Risks of the activity. What are some other things that could happen where we would say the skier knew and appreciated risk and yet voluntarily, they're not inherent, but yet they chose to agree to them. Anyone come up with that?
Maybe this particular resort had a tricky ski lift or something.
So what would they have? So it looked like a really old, cranky, hard to get off ski wrist. So they were negligent because they had a really bad toe. And yet you did what?
Stuck to it.
And how did you know the risk?
You saw it.
Yeah, you saw it. You saw other people getting, like, you know, some of those awful ones where you have to kind of grab on them with one hand while holding your feet. You're like, oh my God, that's awful, right? And you're like, it's not an inherent risk of skiing, but you looked at it, you recognize the negligence that it's a risky toe, and you said, but I'm still going to do it. That would be that, only that flavor. Anything else?
I just have a question. If you decide to go off the jump, does that change? Because inherently going off the jump is dangerous, but at the same time, you voluntarily watch other people. You assume the risk of
going. So do you think falling while going over a jump is an inherent risk?
Yes.
Yeah, correct. I think you probably put it there.
Okay.
You could do something up here. Anyone got a different one up here? And it could be both.
That's what I meant.
Okay, so it could be it's both an inherent risk and you recognize it and say, sure. Then you'd pick up both. But this one's attractive because I don't have to prove what. You actually knew and appreciated it. I could just go, hey, you moron, everybody knows that, inherent risk, right? So it's primary is much more attractive, but something could be both, right? So you could both, but in, oh, I got hands, yep.
Sorry, so what would say, like, if they rented skis from them that looked really crappy? Would that be a secondary or a primary?
What do you think?
I think it would be a secondary because they would have had to know and understand that the risk.
You can definitely get secondary. They look at the skis, go, these bindings are really loose, but they're the last one, so I'm willing to go ahead and use them. That's secondary. I don't think it's an inherent risk of skiing, right?
No.
So anyone come up with, yeah, is everybody good? Can you see the difference between the inherent risks? Okay. Where's the inherent risk argument strongest? Between participants or participant versus owner? So did you get injured by another participant? Participant. So these are easy cases. Hey, would you like to play football? Sorry about your concussion. It's an inherent risk, right? Even if I negligently tackled you because I did a helmet to helmet, right? It's still an inherent risk of the game. Playing golf. Hey, sorry, I was drunk when I swung. Been hit by a golf ball is an inherent risk of the game. So from participant to participant, this is a really strong argument. Sometimes it can work for participant versus owner, right? If you're suing them over one of the inherent risks, right? You're liable because I fell. See it? Okay, is everybody good? Yep.
One last question. Like, going back to the dodgeball example, is the risk for playing dodgeball, is it getting hit by a ball or is it getting a ball thrown at you?
You have to have something that's negligent or why are you suing them?
Okay, so it wouldn't matter how you get hit by the ball. Like, for instance, if the risk was getting hit by a ball, when you're on the second part of the test, didn't volunteer for that risk, you volunteered for getting a ball thrown at you, not perhaps.
So that's why you have a negligent act you can point to, because they negligently kicked at you, right? If you are just injured by a thrown ball, you probably can't point to anything that's a duty breach. Okay, you guys good? Okay, now we're about to do something really horrible. Okay, yep.
But the inherent risk, is it the inherent risk of like an object that you're using or just activity?
It's the activity.
So like with the skis, you couldn't say the inherent risk of using.
No, they look at that activity, at that sport. Okay, are you ready? Because I think you're actually sensing this. Many courts, when they look at this flavor, they say it's not actually a defense. We are not actually saying that the defendant is liable but can assert a defense. We're actually saying what? They're not liable at all. Why? What element? So many people posit that what primary assumption of the risk really is they're not liable at all. Why not? What element?
No breach.
Being capable of breach.
So one argument is it's really a statement that there's no breach. Another argument is that it's really a statement that there's no duty. Bingo. So what's hard about assumption of the risk is that this flavor of it can be seen as an argument of no duty. It can be seen as an argument that there's no breach. So let's do it with our skier, right? I'm skiing. I fell. It hurt. I broke my leg. I'm suing you. Are you liable? Why not? So let's do duty first. There's no duty to
make sure that they don't fall.
There's no duty to make sure I don't fall, right? Who took the risk of falling? I did, right? They don't only have a duty to stop me from falling. Everybody see? So some people regard it as saying there are certain inherent risks, right? I.e. there's a certain part of the duty that the plaintiff says, I'll take that. I'll take the falling. You don't owe me a duty as to falling. You just owe me a duty as to not having large boulders, dangerous unmarked holes, right? Everybody see it? So you can make an argument that primary assumption of the risk is really an assertion of no duty. Good? Some of you also said no breach. Why did you say no breach?
Because even if you had a reasonable care to the device, that falling down is not a breach for that duty.
Right. Slippy snow is not a breach. Okay, we owe you a duty of reasonable safe premises, but slippy snow is not a breach. See it? So some people say what this is really about is, okay, we owe you a duty, but there's no breach. Yes.
Is this then similar to before when we were talking about proximate cause and matching up the breach and the duty and making sure that they comply the same? Like what we were saying before, the duty has to
be. Oh, I know what we were saying before. I'm just trying to work out why you think it's the same as. Because there are respects in which it is the same, and there are respects in which it's radically different. So that's why I was hesitating at the same as. So I don't want to put you on the spot, but if you can articulate why you think it's the same, then I can.
Because if the duty does not, or if, so, yeah, if the duty doesn't match the breach, then they didn't do anything wrong in the first place.
Correct. Okay? This is more an argument that their conduct, it's not that it didn't match, it's that either they didn't owe a duty to make the snow not slippy, or they did owe a duty of reasonable care on the premises, but slippy snow isn't a breach. Okay, so it's not quite the same. It is the same in the sense that here's a concept you could put in two places. So everybody see where we've encountered it is as a defense, a type of implied, right? But you could also put this very same concept in here or in here. So that's the sense in which it's the same. You can move it around. Okay. Yep.
In an exam, would you say to put it in either or both or?
It's usually easier to do it at the end. It's usually easier to get all the way to the end and work out if you think it's an inherent risk that the person's agreed to. Okay. Okay. Let's do the flapper. Dun 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 dun. Cardozo. You know we were doing Cardozo. It's so Cardozo, isn't it? Like, what little quotes are you taking home for Thanksgiving to show you've been at law school? Which one did you like?
I was just going to tell him that his name is
Larnitan. That was Larnitan. This is Cardozo, though. Cardozo. What's Cardozo's quote? The timorous may stay at home. That's what he's famous for. Okay? The flopper was warning to the timid. Wimpy dudes, stay away. We're doing 455 to 456. Okay, remember this? He goes on that exciting Coney Island ride, the flopper. And I want to work out how the flopper works. What'd you do with the flopper? Right, it's like a moving little treadmill, and these like little 19. Oh, let me pull over, right? Oh my goodness, right? It's a thrill ride. Forget the dragster, right? It's like a moving treadmill, and people jump on it, and some of them flop over. Okay? Yep.
Okay, sorry, I'm getting ahead, but I don't understand how you approved a machine that's intending to hit you negatively hit you.
Okay, so let's hold, because that's one of the issues. Okay, so he sues because what happens to him?
Falls and breaks his kneecap.
He falls and breaks his kneecap. Okay, anyone say, I spot secondary assumption of the risk. I'm going to say plaintiff loses because the fact pattern gives me secondary assumption of the risk.
Yeah, he watched the other people do it for a couple minutes and then he voluntarily went up to see if he could.
There you go. Everybody see, that looks like secondary voluntary assumption of risk. He and his family watch people do it. He gets on. He falls. Knows and understands the risk. Voluntarily proceeds to encounter it. Anyone want to say that what Cardozo is actually saying is primary assumption of the risk? So if you look at his opinion, like the second paragraph in his quote on the second page, I don't want to spot where he seems to be saying it's primary assumption of the risk.
One that takes part in such a sport accepts the danger that inherent in it so far as they are obvious and necessary.
Bingo. There's primary assumption of the risk. One who takes part in a sport accepts the inherent risks. What is this ride called? And what does he do?
Flops.
Right? So that is the primary assumption of the risk. It doesn't depend on whether he saw it or knew it. It's just if you decide to ride the flopper, you can't whine when you're flopped. Okay. So we know that you can also make that argument as a duty argument. So what duty do you think they owed him? What is he?
Invitee.
So they owe him a duty of reasonably safe premises. Does that include, what duty does he want to say? Includes, you know, what? See, you just changed the duty. Why did you change the duty? What is the initial duty we think he might be arguing? A duty not to let me fall. Do you think he owes that duty? No, right? So everybody see, you can argue there's no duty even owed to not make you fall if the activity that the land's engaged in is a flopper, okay? Anyone want to argue even if he owed that duty, there's no breach? Reasonable care.
They gave him reasonable care for the type of Coney Island ride that it was.
Right, so if he just bailed, what were you supposed to do? Fall, right? Oh, but you just changed the breach. So we ran the breach as well, letting him fall. That's due. Everybody see? So what a good plaintiff does is pick another breach. What other breaches could you pick?
Not having enough padding.
And then there was one other.
It jerked while he was trying to run on it.
Okay, so if the plaintiff had picked either of those, let's do padding. Is that an inherent risk? Answer? No. Can you defeat it on secondary? Only if what? Oh my goodness, look, that bit isn't padded. Wow. Okay, I'll do it. Right? That's what you need, and there's no evidence in the record of that. So, no. Okay, let's try this one. Jerked because it wouldn't work. All of a sudden, it jerked. Inherent risk? No. Secondary assumption of the risk? Not if it hadn't done it while he was watching it. Bingo. So, notice whether you lose over here in this defense depends on what you're running over there. right? So your temptation is to pick, you made me fall, right? Or I fell while I was skiing, or I was hit by a basketball. If you pick one like that, it's nasty over here. But if you pick something more exotic, it gets a lot harder for them to win over here. Okay, go your lovely ways. On Monday, try and get your memo in without killing yourselves. Return on Monday to the awesome world of more implied assumption of risk.